Drivers, start your engines. Previously recorded in the NASCAR Man Cave, this is the Lap Traffic Podcast, Best of Season 1. All right, Lap Traffic Nation, welcome to episode number 52 of the Lap Traffic Podcast, part 2 of the Best of Season 1. I am the professor, Brandon Crowd, and welcome back to the NASCAR Man Cave. First off, before we get into the interviews and highlights and all that good stuff, big thanks to everyone out there that has listened to the podcast over the weekend. Surpassed 20,000 download streams, plays, whatever the hell you want to call it. Thank you all so much. Means the world. And can't wait for season 2 and to get back in with some real racing stuff. So again, big thanks to everybody. Can't do it without you. Really appreciate it. And make sure you continue to help spread the word. Hope everyone had a great weekend and is getting ready for the holidays. Hope all your shopping's done and all that good stuff. This weekend is going to be very, very busy for myself and NASCAR by marriage. My birthday is Friday, the big 3-5. We're keeping that on the DL. Then on Saturday is dinner for the holidays with Lindsay's mother and all that good stuff. Sunday, dinner with some close friends, stop by my parents, midnight mass. And then on Monday, I, as Lindsay likes to call it, the one time of year I'll cook, we'll be cooking for 30 people. And the NASCAR Man Cave is going to be completely converted over to the Holiday Dinner Man Cave, if you will. That's what's going on this weekend. I'm sure you guys are all going to be very busy as well. And yeah, how about that football over the weekend real quick before we get into things here too? Of course, the one game the Lions win, I decided not to go to and gave my tickets away. And how about that Patriots-Steelers game? I tell you, I maybe don't agree with the call, but I'll take the call and... anytime the Patriots get a W, I am a very, very happy person. Not a whole lot of NASCAR news this past week. Some little things here and there in terms of sponsors and some partnerships. The biggest news, which there's been a lot of flack on Twitter calling it news, but it is news, is the split of Danica Patrick and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. In my opinion, that's news. It's something that happened within the sport. Sure, it may not be as important as what's going on in the world or things of that nature, but to us NASCAR fans, that's news. So yeah, I think people should be talking about it. I think I was joking with a buddy that texted me earlier, and I said, wouldn't it be really interesting if Ricky Stenhouse goes out and has like this amazing breakout year in 2018? I wonder where fingers will point. That happened with Justin Verlander here in Detroit when he was before he got married to Kate Upton, and that all came public. So that should be interesting to follow that for a little bit early into the season. I'm sure there will be some irrelevant connections made there, perhaps. And one of the other things that I find very interesting is regarding Monster Energy asking for another extension in terms of time in deciding whether or not they're going to re-up with their partnership as the premier sponsor for the series. I think it definitely could be interesting if they don't re-up and take the option. If you're NASCAR, you want them to come back, in my opinion, because if you're only able to hold a title sponsor at this level for 2 years, I think that definitely hurts NASCAR's credibility after having such long tenured title sponsors, going back to the Winston Cup, Nextel, Sprint. They haven't had to do this too often, and I know this deal was a little bit interesting in the get-go. So I am very curious to see what happens with the Monster Energy NASCAR partnership, and hopefully they're putting together a big deal, but something tells me that may not be the case. Well, That said, let's get right into the first of the two interviews that I am going to play this week for the best of part two. The show was fortunate enough to develop a relationship with NBC. Just a few weeks ago, Kelly Stavis called in to talk about what race weekend is like for her as a pit reporter. So without further ado, from episode number 47, here is Miss Kelly Stavis. Let's do it.
All right, joining us on the line here, Lap Traffic Nation, from NASCAR and NBC, reporter Kelly Stavis. How you doing, Kelly?
I'm great, thanks. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Hey, absolutely, anytime. So, Kelly, tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, you see on pit road all the time. You've done a lot of covered a lot of different kinds of racing, Grand Am, Wayland Modified, all kinds of stuff. How did you get to pit road for NBC?
Well, I grew up in Denver, Colorado, which at the time certainly did not have a NASCAR presence, even like it does today with Furniture Row Racing. So I did not grow up around racing really of any kind. But I went to school in Southern California, studied broadcast journalism, moved back to Colorado for a brief time to work as a sports anchor for an NBC affiliate there, and then really realized I wanted to get out of the studio at the time and do some sideline stuff. So I moved back to Southern California. I was freelance doing all sorts of sports, from high school football, college baseball, boxing, really anything I could get my hands on. And one day I got a phone call about covering an off-road racing series. Again, I knew nothing about it, but I liked the owner of the series and the people that I'd interviewed with, so I took the job that was airing on Speed Channel at the time. And from there, it just kind of parlayed from one form of racing and one series to the next, different networks. I was just working freelance through them all, including some motocross for NBC. And about 4 years ago, when NBC got the NASCAR contract back, I got the phone call to sign with them full time to be on pit road. So I did a little bit of IndyCar with NBC as well, and then packed up my bags, moved to Charlotte, so I could really get immersed in the NASCAR world. I spent 2 years in Charlotte working on NASCAR America show, going to the all the different shops, getting to know the drivers, the crew chiefs, you know, all the faces I would need to know on the road. And now just finishing up our third season of NASCAR on NBC.
So you've officially earned your stripes, I'd say.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, there's a lot of people ask me, how do you study for it? How do you study? And it's difficult. Of course, you can study to a point, but it's the best way to go about it, in my opinion, is it's that face time. You have to earn the trust and respect of the people that have the answers for you. So I'm looking for information that you can't read about. When I show up to the track, I'm trying to get answers to questions that maybe people have at home, or to get the storylines that people who don't get to go to the track and talk to the crew chiefs and drivers have. But first, they have to know who you are and trust you and decide if they want to open up to you or not. So, yeah, so the time I spent in Charlotte and the time that I spent at the track even before we started NASCAR and NBC was a huge asset.
That's awesome. Hey, Kelly, so you're our first pit road reporter that we've had on the show. Can you walk us through what a typical race weekend is like for you?
Oh, finally, you get a voice of reason on. Very good. Sure. You know, we cover some, you know, every time cars are on track, we've got a show happening, practice, qualifying, and, of course, both the Xfinity Series and Cup, Monster Energy Cup Series races. So, you know, a typical weekend is flying. I live still on the West Coast now that I've left Charlotte. So it's, for me, it's traveling on a Thursday, getting to the track on a Friday morning. I'll look at my schedule and I'll typically have typically 2 to 3 shows a day that we rotate through. So whether it's going into the garage and covering Xfinity Series practice or Cup practice, and then Cup qualifying on a Friday night, Saturday, kind of same routine. You have 1 or 2 shows typically until we have the Xfinity Series race, and then Sunday's obviously Cup only. The other things are just spending time in between shows, kind of walking around the garage again, just trying to make sure you have a good ear on what's happening with different teams in both series. Usually sometime Friday night or Saturday morning, we'll get our pit road split. So whether there's three or four of us on pit road, our pit producer will divide up pit road, try to make it so that we each have, you know, a lot of the big stories so that we can kind of divide and conquer. And once you know specifically who it is you'll be covering in the race, we're kind of running around making sure we check in with each one of those teams to get our notes ready. So that's for Xfinity, and same thing for the Cup Series. We usually get, you know, they pick their select their pit stalls after qualifying Friday night. Usually sometime on Saturday, we find out which teams we have. And as soon as we have some downtime, and as long as the teams aren't too busy, again, we're going to go get our notes. That usually happens Sunday morning more often than not, is about the best time to get to the crew chiefs. Occasionally some drivers you'll see in the garage, they're harder to come by. And then race is on, and you better have some comfortable walking shoes on, because we're on our feet all day, and sometimes it's a hustle running back and forth to the garage if someone significant has had mechanical or wrecked down and is in the garage, or to the infield care center to get those interviews. So once the race starts, it's a lot of reacting to things. You have your notes, but you're really listening to the scanners and reacting to what's happening in the race and on pit road.
Yeah, and you know, you touched on something earlier, Kelly. I mean, you got to get that face time. You got to earn their trust, right? So that they will open up to you. 2017's been a crazy year, stage points lots of pre and post rates penalties and things like that. What are you hearing on what's the chatter on pit road?
I think that this new playoff format has really led to a lot of what we've seen in race and post race. And it's just that there's so much on the line, and you know, these guys, you know how hard it is to win a championship. They all know how hard it is to win a championship. So if they see an opportunity, if we go back to Martinsville and look at maybe first a move that Chase Elliott made on Brad Keselowski towards the end of the race. Chase is not only going for his first win, but obviously a championship as well. And then we have Denny Hamlin moving Chase out of the way. Well, if he doesn't, is he just conceding victory? You know, I'm not saying who's right or wrong. I'm just saying, when you're behind the steering wheel, have their sights set on one thing.
We're talking about
yes, exactly. Well, exactly.
You know, and we talked about that before on our show. It's right after that happened. You know, it's kind of a product of the environment, right?
He's exactly.
You've got to do it. So, you know, what do you do?
Well, and NASCAR's shown, right, that they're not going to penalize for that. So, you know, again, if you know, there's nothing has happened to Denny. Now, ultimately, it kind of maybe hurt his own finish. But, if NASCAR is not going to penalize for those types of moves, then why would anybody stop from making one and going for the win? And it builds drama. I mean, like, don't get me wrong, we love it on the TV side. Are you kidding me? It was like letting a kid into a candy store when those events at Martinsville unfolded. So so I love it, you know. I know it's just good, just builds storylines, builds drama. So I've had a blast, especially with this playoff season.
Kelly, walk us through, maybe you mentioned it, having to know and earn respect and trust to the drivers. Obviously, if a driver's in victory lane, they're going to be happy to talk. How do you approach with different drivers? All have, you know, different personalities. What's the challenge in maybe getting that wreck interview, you know, five laps in or 10 laps to go? How do you handle and approach that type of a situation?
Well, just as you said, everyone is different, right? And you can see that even just watching how these guys react to things. Each one has a different temperament. My personal approach is, you know, unless someone has really done something blatantly wrong, or I always want to I kind of like to soften the blow sometimes. Like, I like to point out what was going well until that point, or you know, there was a period of time that Kevin Harvick hated finishing second. And so you'd think you're talking to a happy driver who was runner-up, but he was so sick of finishing runner-up that you had to find a new way to spin the runner-up finish to remind him of how impressive it is. So it'd be like, Kevin, I'm sure you're sick of finishing second, but my gosh, you're another impressive runner-up. You know, you have to kind of find a way with some of these guys to get their minds right in a way. Sometimes if you have a moment before you go on air, I'll just have a quick chat with the guys so I can get a feel for them and where their heads are.
Sure.
Yeah. So it's and then again it's, or you know, you have to ask the tough questions when they're there. But I don't. We're not covering the White House. You know. I mean, we're also not trying to embarrass anyone, or we're not uncovering anything earth-shattering that's going to change the world.
Right.
So,
right.
I try to keep things in perspective as well. So,
that's one of the things we've talked about on our show. With what's kind of great about NASCAR, you know, sometimes you get, you know, there are drivers, then they're clearly upset, and they might say something that they regret, or you know, maybe whatever. But you know, it's also the great raw purity of it too. It's like better than having something, you know, that they went back to their PR person and they polished something, and you know, and then handed it to you. So it's kind of like the raw emotion. It's kind of cool about NASCAR.
I agree with you 100%, and I never take anything personally. If driver's upset and he gives me a short answer and walks off, I know he's not mad at me. Sure. He's mad at the situation. He's mad at himself. He's mad at another driver. He's mad at whatever the circumstances are. And that's the other thing. I'm like, I don't take it personally. I love it. Hey, Kyle Busch, you're teed off. Great. I want to see it. I want to hear it. And you can storm off. I know you're not, like, I'm just the one standing here at the microphone.
Are you saying that Kyle Busch gets angry and storms off?
No, that was just a random
name.
This is
breaking news.
Just like something that popped into my head.
Kelly, so we got the finale at Homestead coming up on NBC on Sunday, November 19th. How exciting is it for you guys as NBC to have that championship race, and what are you guys looking forward to with Homestead weekend?
Well, I think what's been so awesome is it really has been a winner-take-all, right, that we've seen the past few years. So that has been phenomenal. I thought last year's race was just incredibly exciting. We had Jimmy Johnson starting from the rear, and it looked like he had no hope at a seventh championship. It looked like Carl Edwards was going to finally get his championship until he wrecked late with Joey Logano. I mean, with everything that we already talked about, the pressure of the playoffs up until this point, I mean, when it really comes down to one race, it's like, all right, the 78 team has been pretty dominant, the 18 right behind, but it's, forget all that. It's how do they perform at one track on one certain day? Who's going to be on their A game? Who's going to bring it the best? So that's what I love about it. Now, I know a lot of racing purists maybe don't love that format. But I do, because it's, everybody's in the same boat. Everybody's in the same situation. So it'll be really interesting to see who steps it up when everything is on the line.
Yeah, it's winner take all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so speaking of winner take all, so Martin Truex Jr. has been unstoppable at the mile and a half tracks. Homestead, mile and a half track. Kevin Harvick did the unthinkable at Texas and rose to the occasion there.
Right.
What has to happen for Martin Truex Jr. not to win the championship? Because it's his to lose. So what's got to unfold for him not to win?
You know, the advantage that Truex, and I would say Kyle Busch, winning the first race of the last round as well, what's really helped them is the extra time to specifically work on their Homestead cars. And I talked to Kyle Busch's crew chief Adam Stevens about this at Texas. And you know, at the track, were they doing anything that different, much different? No, but they, back at the shop, have kind of been splitting their time between their Texas car and their Phoenix car and working on their homestead car. So they've had a couple extra weeks to really get things right. The interesting thing about the 78 is talking to that team just a few weeks ago, as strong as they've been on the mile and a half, they felt less confident about Miami. They said that was it's its own animal, right? Miami is a unique mile and a half track, and they didn't feel as confident about it. Now, they did get to go and do a test there that apparently went really well. They've got some new ideas that they put to use in that test. So, but again, it's just, you know, one bad pit stop, one loose wheel.
Well, we saw that with Joey Logano a couple years ago with the Jack.
Exactly.
Track,
you know? Yeah. Right, in the first year of this format, exactly. And so it's just, it's like what I said before, it really comes down to all aspects. You have to be perfect in strategy, on pit road, behind the wheel. You have to be lucky to an extent, because we've seen plenty of people get messed up in someone else's accident. And it all started on Friday with qualifying. So there is so much that goes into winning a race. That, you know, as strong as the 78 team has been, you can't just hand it to them.
Sure. So speaking of the 78, you said you're from Denver. What's everybody say? So they're kind of out there on their own island doing their own thing. What's the word in Charlotte? What are they saying about that? Because we talked about it a couple weeks ago. I'm like, I'd be buying the building right next door to them. Like, there's something in the water. There's something, you know, what are they doing?
Well, that's the thing, right? So Furniture Row Racing shares all their information with Joe Gibbs Racing. You know, it goes back and forth. But there's clearly something that Cole Pern and his engineers and his mechanics have hit on that just is just working. And I think a lot of people want to know, and I joke with them every time I walk into the team hall. I'm like, today's the day you tell me all your secrets. Not that I would understand anything that they could possibly tell me about aero or otherwise on the car. But yeah, they've just hit on something, and you're right. I mean, it's probably kind of nice that they're 1,500 miles away or whatever it is from the rest of NASCAR world. But I'll tell you something else. My whole family lives in Denver, and it's a huge sports town, and it's been really cool to see how that city has grabbed a hold of Furniture Row Racing, and it's, you know, now another major sports
that's awesome.
Team
that's so cool.
There in that city. Yeah, that's awesome. Been really cool.
All right, Kelly, well, we appreciate the time. Do you want to tell our listeners how they can follow you and keep up with you?
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter or Instagram, both just Kelly Stavast, KELISTAVAST. But make sure you tune in on NBC for Miami Homestead Race, the championship, 3 Eastern. I can hardly wait to get there.
Yeah, that's awesome. Kelly, big thanks for coming on the show. NASCAR and NBC reporter Kelly Stavast, thanks for joining us here on Lap Traffic.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
I tell you, that was a blast talking to Kelly a few weeks ago to get her perspective on pit road, and ended up being one of two pit reporters that we actually had on, as you all remember from episode 50, Matt Yoakum joined the show. All right, before I drop in the second interview, I am going to hit some social media real quick. Everyone, make sure you check out our website, thelaptrafficpodcast.com. Like us on Facebook, The Lap Traffic Podcast, and make sure you give the show a follow at Lap Traffic PC on Twitter. Make sure you listen on iTunes, Podbean, subscribe, download, comment. Also on Google Play, Stitcher, all the good stuff, any of the popular places where you're going to listen to podcasts. This show is there, so make sure you tell your friends. So close to giving away this t-shirt. Less than 70 followers to go on this signed Lap Traffic t-shirt by the Eldora Truck Field could be yours. So make sure you spread word about that as well. Some new follower shout-outs over on Facebook. Jeffrey Parker from Chesterfield, big NASCAR fan. Over on Twitter, Kurt Bustle at Kurt Bustle loves NASCAR and guitars. Maybe you can rock out a new song for us. Marty Gallagher at Dirty Asphalt from Minnesota. Simulator creator at Sim Race Guy. This guy builds simulators for iRacing and is a fellow Michigander. So welcome to the show. Make sure you check out the website, thelaptrafficpodcast.com, for your hoodies, t-shirts, and more. And as new things come available that I can offer, I will put them out there. I could actually put a clock. You could have your very own Laugh Traffic clock hanging in your man cave, but I think that's a tad excessive. I am still in the process of arguing with Amazon to try to get the portal back, so hopefully that will be back by the new year. I've gotten some new sticker and koozies requests. That's going to wait until the new year as well. So there's that. Still working on the fantasy for next year as well, too. I started playing around a little bit today. Looked at Yahoo Fantasy Live stuff and a few things there, so that's all being in the works. But again, thank you everyone for all that you do for the show. And now, without further ado, back around the summertime, when NBC was getting ready to take over for the rest of the season, heading into the July Daytona race, Mr. Rick Allen called in and was able to chat with him for a while. So here is part two of this week's NBC feature from episode number 27, Mr. Rick Allen.
NBC will kick off its coverage of the 2017 NASCAR Cup Series live from Daytona International Speedway on Saturday, July 1st at 7 p.m. And joining us on the line is NBC NASCAR broadcaster Rick Allen. Welcome.
I am. I'm a little disappointed that you guys are in a man cave and you asked me to call in. I mean, why was I invited to the man cave?
Hey, man, we can do this again. Yeah. We can bring in.
They said you weren't going to bring beer, so we said, no, we're going to have to do it over the phone. So.
Maybe the... Let's do the 29th or 30th edition where you guys invite me to the man cave.
Done.
It's done deal.
Yeah.
Done deal. We charge admission because it's kind of like a museum in here. It goes from early NASCAR to new NASCAR, but I think we can get you
we
in.
We can get
it. We can get you
we
in.
We can slide him in.
listening to your voices, I can't imagine early NASCAR for you guys is much past, what, about 2000, 1995?
I am 1 year older than you, Mr. Allen.
Oh, I feel good now.
Yeah,
thank
see
you.
There?
I'm right. 34.
Yeah. You notice I didn't throw any number out there.
Yeah,
I was
right.
Going to say I'm older. That's all.
I did notice that, and thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
So, welcome to the show, sir.
Yeah, so you guys are kicking off your 2017 season.
Yes, we're looking forward to it coming up next weekend. Actually, the weekend of the 30th of June. We've got the Xfinity Series Subway Firecracker 250 that Friday night on NBCSN. And then on Saturday night, we get things underway with the Coke Zero 400. That's at 7 o'clock on NBC. So make sure all of your listeners tune in. We'd love to talk racing with them.
Absolutely. You know, it's cool that they brought back the Firecracker name for the Xfinity side of things. I love the old – I've got this old school Daytona Firecracker 400 shirt, and I think that's awesome they brought that name back.
Yeah.
You should wash that thing, too. I think I can smell it from where I am.
It's a true story. Because the last time Harvick won, I think it was the 2011 Daytona, and I haven't washed it since. And he hasn't won it since then either, though.
I was wondering what that smell was. Good job. Thanks.
Well, hey, Rick, what'd you think of the racing at MIS this weekend?
I thought it was great. As a matter of fact, we did a rehearsal. Jeff Burton, Steve Letart, and I did a rehearsal using that race, and we were able to do it and kind of watch it again. I watched it for the first time live and then watching it again while we did a rehearsal. Really a dominant performance by Martin Truex Jr., but then in the end, you know, with Kyle Larson, so talented. What a great restart he had, was able to keep himself out front. Stay in front of Kyle Busch. I mean, just some amazing things that he was able to do to get that win. So really fun race. I love Michigan. I love to see the speeds that they're able to turn there. You know, the cars almost 220 miles an hour entering the turn is just phenomenal.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that about Truex. I mean, this guy is racking up the stage wins left and right. This guy kicks ass the first half of the race. You know, he's closed a couple of them out, but yeah, he is literally dominating these stage wins.
But that's something that we've talked about too, though, Rick. Here's like, you know, what are they doing or not doing to, you know, to win? You know, the one that counts is the third stage,
mm-hmm.
right? And it seems like they're, you know, they're right there and they're ready to. You know, they're the dominant car, and something changes. You know, and I don't any idea what what they're doing or not doing there, or is it just everybody just making better changes at the end of the race?
Well, I don't think it was changed so much as, I mean, I think Martin Truex Jr. lost this race on the restart. He either missed a shift or something going through one and two and backed all the way up to 12th. But I just think they're probably one of the most consistent teams right now all year. They've been just strong. I mean, it's been impressive. Two wins already on the season.
Yeah.
I think they mesh. You know, Cole Pearn and Martin Truex Jr., once they became a team, those two guys have just really clicked, and things have taken off for them. So not only are they normally dominant on mile-and-a-half tracks, but I think they're really having a lot of success on short tracks, super speedways. Anywhere they go, they're going to be in contention for a win. And that's what I think any team wants to be. They want to be in contention. When that last restart happens or the final laps, they want to have a chance at the win. And I think they're constantly there. So I don't discount, yes, they've won or a lot of stages, and that's great. And they're adding, you know, a ton of playoff points to the resume right now to get ready for the end of the season. But I just think they stay consistent like they are. And they're going to win more races, and they've got a great shot at winning a championship.
You know, and they're not a big team either.
No.
I mean, you know, they're not a four-car team. They're not a, you know. So
it's their first year with two.
What they're doing is it's pretty remarkable, you know, with the resources they have.
You know? Yeah, and I think two-car teams right now are looking pretty good. I mean, you look at Penske, a two-car team. They're very strong. Obviously, Furniture Row has been very, very strong. Chip Ganassi Racing, you know, Kyle Larson now already. A couple wins. So you look at these two-car teams, and they're really starting to click. And it's pretty impressive that they're outperforming the big teams, the Joe Gibbs Racing and the Hendrick Motorsports. Outperforming these four-car teams. And I think they're right now they've hit on some things, and their crew chiefs are understanding the way the stages work, just making the most of the opportunities that are in front of them.
Well, Rick, I couldn't agree more with you. And you mentioned that you watched the race a couple times. Now, we were there, so I don't know what was shown on TV, but I'd love to get your opinion on this. With about, God, I want to say it was around lap 140, there was a hat that was sitting on the front stretch for about 15 laps.
I read the official statement.
I didn't see that. Yeah. Rick, any comment on why a caution wasn't thrown and how you, as a broadcaster, when the camera might show something, try to explain that NASCAR doesn't throw it, but then we see all these supposed phantom debris cautions when they don't show anything?
On a weekly basis from NASCAR is that they will always err on the side of caution. So if there is a piece of debris that either is in the groove or the line of traffic that everyone's running, or that potentially could affect the performance of a car, like at Michigan, there was a caution thrown because there was a big trash bag that was floating around. And that trash bag, if it would have got on a grill of a car, obviously it would have overheated immediately almost, and that would have been a disadvantage for that team. So they threw a caution for that.
We had watched that fly over us for about 5 or 10 minutes. and honestly, you know, you talk about the grill, but, I mean, truthfully, it could have hit a windshield, and it would have stuck.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big deal. Now, the official statement that I read from NASCAR today was they saw the hat. It was off the racing line. And it was moving. They were keeping an eye on it, but they determined it was a straw hat, and it would disintegrate if it got hit at 215 miles an hour.
Yep.
So that's why they didn't. Yes. That was
Fair
the
enough.
Answer.
All right. Good to know.
The bag flew over your guys' head, why didn't you just grab it? So it didn't.
You know what? I put Brandon on my shoulders. He's still, but no, nothing. He still couldn't get it. You know?
Come on, B. Reach for
people were asking me to take my shirt off and stuff, so I got caught up in the moment.
Whoa,
and
wait
I forgot.
A minute. Hold on.
No, he didn't.
Are you guys telling me that you got within a mile of the racetrack and you were still wearing your shirts?
Yes.
Really?
That's shocking.
Amazing. I don't know if I've ever seen a NASCAR fan that has made it within a mile of a racetrack and kept his shirt on.
Oh, That's awesome.
Yeah. I think you're right. We saw a couple of those.
Yeah, we
dudes
saw
too.
A few that shouldn't, but yeah, we don't judge.
We were pretty worried about
there's
a couple of them.
There's quite a few that should keep their shirts on, by
yes,
the way.
Yes.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, Rick, tell our listeners about how your path. You know, I mean, you started out short track racing guy and worked your way up. Tell us about the journey.
Well, I got on the internet a long, long time ago, and I read a story about this guy named Tony Smith. He started off announcing at short tracks, like a dirt track. He was a public address announcer. Uh-huh. And I decided to follow that path. And so I started out – actually, I was an athlete at the University of Nebraska, and I did an event called the Decathlon. And so while I was in the indoor part of the season, one of the coaches – said, hey, you know, could you help the announcers? We got only one announcer here. Could you help the announcer? And I said, sure. You know, so I grabbed the microphone and my job was to say, quiet for the start, please. And I would say that and people were like, you know, you got a pretty good voice. You might want to think about getting into broadcasting. One thing led to another, advanced through college and whatever. And I took a job with the University of Nebraska as the public address announcer. And so I was announcing football and basketball and everything there. And that moved into one of the locals there had a dirt track at Eagle Raceway in Eagle, Nebraska, which was just outside of Lincoln. And he asked me to come and announce at his dirt track. And so while I was there, a guy by the name of Tom Deary, one of the NASCAR officials, was coming around and checking. We were a NASCAR sanctioned track. He was checking on everything. And he said, send a demo tape in because Fox and NBC are taking over the broadcast and they're looking for fresh, you know, young talent that, you know, people don't know about.
Oh, so this was a long time ago.
This was a long time ago. I have a demo tape. And so I sent in a commercial that I had done with Tom Osborne and Barry Switzer. And it was a cell phone commercial. I sent that in. And within about a week, I got a call from both Fox and NBC. And then Fox gave me a shot. They said, you know, come out and audition. I did a couple times. And 2 years later, they asked me to call the Camping World Truck Series. So it was an interesting journey. I know a lot of people out there that are in broadcasting school and have got broadcasting degrees are all mad at me because I actually didn't take any classes and I was never on the radio. And I started off on national television. So I skipped a few steps.
Yeah.
But
when you're good, you're good.
I think it's the radio face that I have. That for some reason has put me on television. I'm not sure how that works.
No, that's cool. That's cool. And like Igor, that's billed as the world's fastest third mile or something like that too, isn't it? Or it's a pretty cool looking track. Yeah.
As a matter of fact, you know, Kyle Larson won at Eagle Raceway driving Ricky Stenhouse Jr.'s car before he went to Michigan.
That's where I read it. Yeah, I remember that. And then he just
won on Monday night, I believe.
It's race that he's won in, that Kyle Larson's won in like 5 days or something.
Three in a row, and it started at Eagle Raceway. So
that's awesome.
We have either. Actually, I talked to him about it. I'm buddies with Ricky Stenhouse and Kyle. We're in a golf guys tour group here in Charlotte in the North Carolina area. And so we were talking about it and he was really excited. He said it's one of the cooler racetracks that he's raced on. So that was fun.
That's awesome. Very cool. Rick, so you covered your way into the sport, but so you kind of mentioned it at the beginning. So the season's in full gear and you guys are just getting ready to take over. So what's your preparation like? When do you guys start? What's the transition period like for you guys, knowing that you got fans that are expecting a flawless transition when you guys take over?
That's exactly why we watch every single race. And the funny thing is a lot of people don't understand that Jeff Burton and Steve Letard and I are very good friends. And so we will actually watch races not sitting together on a couch, but sitting individually wherever we are. But we have a text group message between the three of us, and we will text the entire race talking about, you know, hey, that was great. We love what they did there. We do this a little bit different. You know, maybe we should show this type of thing. And so we pay attention from the drop of the green flag in Daytona all the way through Sonoma, which is coming up this weekend. And we will watch these races somewhat together. So when we do get to Daytona, we have really already watched races together for the entire season. So we're just more or less getting together.
You're just doing it in person now.
Yeah.
Yeah. What we've done on the phone and sometimes we get together. We've gotten together for two races where we're actually, you know, sitting in somebody's house watching the races together. And it's just, we like to do that just because that way we can, you know, kind of talk about things that we like, what we don't like, and just stay kind of in that that mode of what we do. You know, we watch races together, and hopefully, you know, the couple million people that are watching it with us have as much fun as we do.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's very cool.
You know, one of the things that I do miss, and nobody does this anymore, but, you know, they used to, like, run through the field, you know, and just give a break, that, you know, yeah, whatever. You know, all the way back, you know, and I like seeing some of the underfunded guys get a little TV time occasionally, too. You know, I do miss.
Yeah, we like that, too. I like to give as many back as I can. I know that there's a lot of there's great racing all over the track. And that's the one thing.
Exactly.
That, you know, our philosophy is, if there are people racing for position, I don't care if it's for fifth or if it's for, you know, 40th. Obviously, you're not racing for 40th. But if it's for, you know, 35th, and it's a good battle and we're watching these guys race, that's fun to watch. And so we'll watch those things. So wherever there's a race on the track, it only takes two cars to make a race.
Absolutely.
So
yeah,
wherever there's a good race on the track, we try to get to it.
Yeah, you know, and I was watching at Michigan. There were some good battles, you know, in 19th, 20th, 21st. You know, they don't get that TV time, you know. So
I think that's a problem. Like, that's one of my biggest issues. Like with Pocono, I have a big issue with Pocono in that, you know, the and I've made this very loud and clear, but you know, you get the 12-second, 10-second gaps between first and second, or second and third, and it just seems like the camera is asphyxiated on a single car, and there's got to be more going on. And, you know, I at least show me something to keep me entertained while I'm watching, you know, 400 miles at Pocono.
The
thing about Pocono is that you can pit under green at Pocono. If you're within 12 seconds of the race leader, you can stay on the lead lap.
Right.
And so we look at the different strategies, because especially having Steve Letarte in the booth, I mean, the guy absolutely stole a race with Dale Earnhardt Jr. because he was smarter than all the other crew chiefs. A late restart had him come after like four laps. He came to pit road and everybody's scratching their head going, why would Dale Jr. come to pit road, you know, four laps after a restart? We know he's got enough fuel. We know he's, you know, he's good to go on tires and everything. Well, he did it like a road course. He decided, you know what, I'm going to back it up and I'll come in when I know I can get to the end, because he wasn't up front. He wasn't leading the race, but he was within 12 seconds of the leader. So he came first, got on the pit road, knowing that everybody else had to come to pit road. And he won the race that way. And so that's the way we look every race. We don't say, okay, that guy's out leading and we're just going to follow him for, you know, 3, 4, 5 minutes and talk about him or not show any of the racing. We look at every aspect of it. You know, what strategy will it take for somebody who's running 10th or 15th to win the race, to steal the race?
Yeah.
And so that's our goal.
Seen a lot of that this year with the stages. Now, I think that's thrown a little bit in there in from crew chief perspective. You know, that does add some strategy to it and kind of, you know, how they're going to, you know, go for the race. So, yeah, I like that for sure. And Steve, no question, Mr. Letarte's he's a pretty smart guy. Yeah.
He's won a race or two.
He is a pretty smart guy. Yeah. It's good that we have smart people.
He's qualified.
Yeah. Rick, so we've seen a couple instances this season where Tony and I have talked about this at length in terms of the access that media gets with the drivers after an incident on the track or a wreck or something like that, where as soon as they're released from the medical center, there's a camera there. And we kind of compared that to other sports like football, for example. If a player gets injured on the field and is carted off, you know, there's no camera there interviewing him 2 minutes later where he could maybe say something that might be against PR for himself or PR for the team. What's your take on, you know, you know, I'm going back to the 43 car getting in the wreck with, you know, and Danica and her comments and all that kind of stuff. Is it maybe a little too soon that the drivers are interviewed where they're still heated from on-track competition and stuff like that?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. And I guess the answer would be, do you want to hear somebody's raw emotion, or would you rather hear what a public relations or a PR person coaches them to say?
Sure. Yeah.
And what ends up happening is not that I'm saying, you know, a PR person doesn't have a lot of wisdom and could help some drivers avoid the rest of the week and the rest of, you know, the year having to deal with something that they had said that, you know, was at the heat of the moment. But I think that's one of the great things about this sport, about the sport of racing, is the availability of the participants, the availability of the athletes, the drivers, the people that are in the heat of the moment. I mean, we're literally talking to the drivers while they're on the track. I mean, it's to that point where you can, you know, during a caution after a stage win, we get to hear from that driver.
That is pretty cool.
That's just, those are things that no other sport gives you access to.
No.
And so, yes, when you do come to somebody and that's heated and maybe they haven't had a chance to see everything, maybe they haven't had a chance to formulate the proper answer, yes, you're going to get an answer that might upset some people or maybe won't look that good on them. But they also, if they're in the sport, they know that that's a possibility.
Sure.
They know that that is part of this sport, that media, people are going to have access to them immediately. The second they get out of their car, a camera is there and a microphone is there.
Yeah.
And whatever they say is going to be recorded.
Well,
so they know that coming in.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. You know, I look at it from, you know, us this weekend. You know, we're a little small fan base podcast, and MIS gave us, you know, garage access and media credentials for the weekend. You know, we didn't ask any question during any of the press conferences, or, you know, we just sit back and observed. But, you know, if we had an NFL podcast, there's no way the Detroit Lions or the National Football League were going to let us do what NASCAR and MIS gave us the incredible experience of doing this weekend. So, yeah, that's.
But honestly, wouldn't it have been awesome if you guys would have been sitting there and raise your hand and they call upon you and you say, yes, laptraffic.com. I just want to say, nice job, Kyle Larson. Great win.
You know who, awesome? Honestly, so we're sitting through the some of the earlier media sessions, and Ryan Blaney was pretty hilarious.
He was,
and they were ripping on him. Apparently, he got pretty tore up after his win. I think he had about a 2-day hangover after that one. So according from what I got,
he was just happy to be back at the track.
Yeah, he was.
At least Ryan Blaney. Actually, I'm a part of a. It's called the Hoop Group. We play basketball. It's actually at Denny Hamlin's house. He has a basketball court.
That's
in his
cool.
House. And so Ryan Blaney's a part of the Hoop Group. He's a really good basketball player.
Is he really?
Legitimately really good. Has a great handle, a great shot. The dude can jump. I mean, it's impressive how good he is. And I guess his uncle was actually, I believe, recruited or given a scholarship to play basketball. So, I mean, it's in the family, but he's legit. He's a good dude. But, yeah, he does party a little bit. Yeah.
That's awesome.
But, you know, I overheard him say, like, you know, I mean, his first win and, you know, whatever. That's, you know, he should enjoy
Hell
it.
Hell, yeah.
But he just said, he's like, you know, it's, a, you know, Wood Brothers is back in Victory Lane and everything. And they unveiled their new car and everything. And when they were done, we were walking back. And he said, man, I just can't wait to get back in the car. It's been a long week. I just want to race, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's neighbors with Dale Earnhardt Jr. I mean, Dale Earnhardt Jr., I think he dropped off like 4 coolers of beer on his front
awesome.
Door at like 3 a.m. or something before Ryan got back. He already had these coolers filled with beer sitting on his porch. So it's pretty cool.
That is awesome.
Very cool.
So looking at some of the other stuff, you know, we followed you for a long time, but we're huge fans of Eldora. We're going to be at Eldora here a couple weeks.
Right? I know, it's crazy.
We'll be doing a show from there. You called those races there for a long time. Would you like to see more tracks like Eldora mixed into the schedule?
I think so. Well, I say that, and I also think the uniqueness of Eldora has a special kind of feeling.
Yeah.
So if you dilute it, anytime you dilute something, it takes a little bit of the luster. I mean, kind of, you know, tarnishes it a little bit or takes it down a little bit. So yes, I would love to see other short tracks or dirt tracks or other, you know, kind of smaller venues have the opportunity to see the amazing talent that is in not only the Camping World Truck Series, but the Xfinity Series, the Monster Energy Cup Series. I mean, if you could show other venues, you know, what that's like, it'd be great. But at the same time, if you do that too many places, then I think it takes away a little bit
of the unique.
The uniqueness or star power that Eldora has. But boy, I love Eldora. What a great racetrack.
We
had a blast.
Big fans.
Yes.
We're big fans. So you mentioned, you know, we're big. I'm a big truck guy, but so lots of different levels in there. The amount of talent that's coming through these series right now, not just in Monster, you know, in Xfinity and in the truck series it's like nothing. I haven't seen this in a long time. Anybody that jumps to the front of your list right there, Rick, that who are the guys that you think are going to really do something in the future?
I tell you, it's really tough to predict because some guys will look really impressive in great equipment. And as you watch them and they get an opportunity to drive, say, you know, for Kyle Busch or something in the Camping World Truck Series, yes, you have to have talent to be able to get to that level that, you know, Kyle Busch will let you drive his equipment. But once you get in there and you have equipment that you know either should win or very easily could win a race, it's difficult to judge that talent. So I guess I would look at, and somebody, you know, close to me in the sense that I watched him race now for quite a few years just because I'm good buddies with his dad now, is Harrison Burton. He's really, really talented.
Yeah, he's he won at Toledo in an ARCA race. Yeah,
an ARCA race. And to win at Toledo in an ARCA race is very difficult to do. I've called a lot of ARCA races at Toledo, and I'm telling you, you have to be very talented to be able to go out and win a race there against the, you know, the level of competition in the ARCA series at that racetrack. I mean, their home track. So Harrison Burton, I think, is really talented. He's a great young shoe. He'll be good. I think we're going to see some great things out of William Byron.
I think so too.
When he makes that move. And obviously when somebody like Rick Hendrick says, you know what, you know, this kid's good and we want to make sure he stays with us, you know, he's seen something and he has a lot of people that have watched a lot of races that also are giving him, you know, their input. So I would say William Byron's going to be a fun kid to watch, just progress and see how he does moving up through the ranks. But if you look right now just at the Cup Series, I mean, the Cup Series alone, Chase Elliott, he's only 21 years old. Kyle Larson, he's 24 years old. Eric Jones is 21 years old. I mean, you've got already some really good talent in the Cup Series. They're young.
I agree.
People are complaining about the level of, you know, that the direction of the sport is, you know, in jeopardy. And I think the exact opposite. I look at like those guys you just rattled, you know, Daniel Hemric, Cole Custer. I mean, these guys, we're setting up to have some good racing over the next decade, and I'm excited about it. You know,
you guys have missed the guy that I watch. So, ooh. I mean, Byron, so like William Byron, I mean, he gave Denny Hamlin all he could handle.
Oh, yes, he did.
I mean, his Denny Hamlin's hands were officially full.
Yeah.
The guy that impresses me, and I mean, just, you know, when he's guys, it just seems like whatever he sits in, Christopher Bell.
Yep.
Yep. I mean, I agree.
Man, a kid is fast.
On the flip side, Rick, is there anyone that's shocked you in terms of lack of performance this year?
Well, I think I'm still a little bit shocked that there's a couple guys that haven't won yet, which you would expect them to have won. You know, Denny Hamlin, you would think he would have a win by now. He doesn't. His teammate, Kyle Busch, another guy who you would expect to have already got a win. He doesn't. Matt Kenseth doesn't have a win. I mean, Joe Gibbs Racing was the dominant team. I mean, it was Toyota, Joe Gibbs Racing, those guys, you know, every race you're expecting one of them to get to victory lane, and they haven't. So I think that's a little bit shocking, but I'm not saying that, you know, any week those guys can win.
Sure.
And honestly,
Matt Kenseth, had he not slid through his pit box twice,
right?
He was up there. He was in the conversation towards the front of that pack. But absolutely. You know, one of the things that I find strange, because you touched on it early, but so Chase Elliott, clearly superstar, you know, and only going to get bigger. But he hasn't got his first win. Meanwhile, Blaney's got his. Stenhouse has got his. Larson.
Dylan.
You know, yeah. Dylan's got his. You know, he's gotten, you know, does that get in your head a little bit, you think? Or, you know, as you start pressing?
Yeah, it does. And I think Chase Elliott's probably his toughest critic. And so that's the other problem, is he knows he should win. He knows he's in equipment that will win. And, you know, with the exception of a couple bad restarts, he should have won Michigan last year.
Yeah.
You know, so you look at a few situations where just a little mistake. And I think that's what drivers, they learn very quickly in the Cup Series, that there are so many good teams, there are so many talented drivers, that even a little mistake will steal a win from you. So you have to be almost mistake-free to be able to get a win. And that's where I think these drivers have to learn that they're long. These are long races. There's an endurance part that goes to it, because the longer the race, the hotter you are in the car, the more likely you are to make a mistake. And they have to be mentally focused for, you know, 3.5-4 hours, and that's tough to do. And so I think that's one thing that Chase Elliott's going to learn. And I think once he figures that out, I think he's going to be phenomenal. So I don't think it's, you know, a matter of if he ever gets that first win. It's when it happens, and then can you hold him back after it happens?
Yeah,
because
I agree.
Get on the
Absolutely.
No, yeah.
I agree entirely. It's just, you know, I would have thought that he would have got his way before, you know, these other guys that are getting theirs now. So.
Sure.
Yeah. Well,
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, what is it? We've had 10 different drivers with a win this year, you know, and like we were saying, you know, drivers that we expected to win haven't, and drivers that weren't even on our radar. Ryan Newman was not on my radar to get a win, and, you know,
Ricky Stenhouse,
you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and you got to look at, you know, of those 10 wins, one of them's encumbered. I don't like that word, by the way.
Yeah.
I've never really been a fan of the whole encumbered win, but you got an encumbered win with Joey Logano. So there, it's really, yeah, I think of the years that there has been a playoff system in place for NASCAR, I think this might be the year that we get the closest number of wins for the positions that are available. So of the 16 positions that are available, I think we could get to 14 or 15 winners.
I agree completely. But what I'm curious to see play out is, now that the playoff points are going to carry over in the rounds in the playoffs, you know, you look at a guy with, like Martin Truex Jr., who got eliminated early last year because with the reseeding and there not being the playoff points, you know, he's already got 20 in the bag, and he's, you know, going to be able to carry those over into each round. So that's going to, I think, play out in an interesting fashion as well once we get to the playoffs.
Absolutely. I think and what's going to happen is Martin Truex Jr. is probably going to do the first three races. I mean, that first round, he's probably going to race them completely different than some of the other guys that are in the playoffs, because
he may already have a full race lead going into that, basically.
Right. Yeah. Why would you gamble and potentially get yourself in a position to where you wouldn't advance when you know that those points are going to move on with you every round? And so I think that's going to change the way some guys race, just because if they have more points, they're going to be able to race a little bit easier, maybe not take on the same challenges, or maybe put their car in the same position that some of the guys that are, say, eighth on back as far as the playoff points are concerned. Those guys are going to be aggressive, trying to win every stage, trying to get every playoff point they can get, so that they can then ensure that they're going to advance into the next round. So I really think it's going to make for a great final 10 races.
And I'm really glad that NBC hasn't, because we get to be right there,
front and center,
front row, enjoying the whole thing.
Well, we've talked about it too. You know, we look at, you know, there's the criticism of the Cup guys racing in truck and Xfinity, which takes away from those guys maybe getting the spotlight in victory lane. But those guys aren't earning the playoff points that because of the Cup drivers, you know, getting those stage wins in those races. There's not a lot of playoff points that have been earned by the Xfinity and truck regulars in the season, which is going to make those series championships playoffs even more exciting, because those guys are going to be racing knowing that they're so close.
It'll be a lot tighter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they have to. I mean, that's the brilliance of the way this playoff is set up. They've got to fight every single race for every point they can get, because there's only going to be three winners in a round, and if they're not one of those three, they got to advance on points. So that's why I think every position matters on the racetrack, and that's what's exciting about right now. The way the sport is we can watch the great battles for 30th or 25th or 20th, because those points matter.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. Hey, Rick, if I could get your opinion, I've gone off on tangents on this overtime line. I hate it. Can't stand it. Not even going to be blunt, or I'm going to be blunt about it. I would really like to see a combination of, you know, with this overtime line, NASCAR came out and said unlimited attempts. Great. I like that feature. I like the old style in that we had at least raced back to the checker to try to at least take the white flag. What's your thought? I really would like to see this overtime line go in 2018 and have unlimited attempts to take the white flag.
I think the reason the overtime line came into play was super speedways.
Okay.
And that was because when you get everybody bottled up and they're all fighting for position and they're all in a pack, there's a lot of danger that comes into those guys racing for position in that pack. And so for the opportunity for fans to see a race have chance to win under green flag conditions, I think they wanted to say, okay, if the leader gets all the way at least a half a lap and gets to this line before something happens, then that race is official. But if they don't get there, then we're going to restart again. We're going to try again until they get there. And I think it was in those situations when they're all packed together, it's most likely that something's going to happen on the restart before they get all the way around to that line.
Right.
So I think the rare instances, and I know the one you're talking about, but the rare instance left over where you have an accident happen in a position where, and I think at the time the guys didn't really know what was happening. I think because they didn't know where the overtime line was. I think once the fans are completely aware of it, and they should have been told ahead of time what the rule is and how it works and where that line is, because that line now becomes very, very important. And Jimmy Johnson found that out, that you get back to that line before the caution comes out. Once you've cleared that line and a caution comes out, field's frozen, and they go to video and they look at, see who the winner of the race is. And so that's, I don't really have a problem with the overtime line. My wife hates the fact that they call it overtime because there's not a clock.
That's a fair assumption.
I brought that up to my friends at NASCAR, and they kind of just say, you know what, it's overtime, so have her deal with it.
All right, so let me ask you this. So when
so
when you're sitting there, you're watching the race with Jeff Burton and Steve Letarte. So if you guys took over NASCAR, you guys are the top three officials in NASCAR. What would you change the first week?
Wait a second. You're telling me that we're not the top three in NASCAR right now?
Just like bricks come tumbling down.
The guy can't even get the overtime line changed. What are you talking
this
about?
Is amazing. I can't believe this reality check has come to play here. You know what? I would take away I would take away the spoiler on the front of the car. I would take away any kind of tapered spacers. I would give them as much horsepower as they want, because I think the driver needs to be able to decide, you know what, I need to get out of the gas.
Yeah.
So that's if I were to take over and say for a day, you know, this is the changes I would make, that would be what I would make. But at the same time, I don't have all of the data and the information that NASCAR has, and I'm sure that they know that there is more danger to maybe the fans if they have all that horsepower and the cars are maybe going faster, or a throttle sticks or something in that situation. You know, they have a lot more information than I do, but those would be the things. I think it would make for better racing if the splitter would be taken away, because that's such an aerodynamic advantage.
I agree. 100%.
But then I'd give more horsepower. I'd say, you know what, guys, go at it. You know, if you're willing to go faster than what we've seen people go, then I want to watch. You know, that's something I want to watch.
Sure, that's part of racing.
But they need to also realize that the second that they push the limit a little too far, they're going to hit the wall. And so I think you put that into the driver's hands. Don't take it away from them and make them have to play follow the leader, or have to, you know, do the side drafting. And they, I mean, I'll tell you, they've learned a lot and they've done some amazing things. Kyle Larson won the race by side drafting Kyle Busch on the restart, putting air on his spoiler and able to get by him on the inside. And that's what won Kyle Larson the race. And so that's a piece of information that those drivers have learned. He utilized it and won the race at Michigan. Those are the types of things where I kind of would rather see the guy outrun somebody, or, you know, do something more daring than I thought anybody would be able to do. And that's the way they would win the race. But you know what? They're doing everything they can to get the win.
Sure. But it separates, like, who's got the best equipment and who's the best driver. Right? That draws a line in there a little bit, or puts a little more in the driver's hands. But let me ask you this, because I know you're an NCAA athlete. Are drivers athletes?
That's a great question, by the way. I get that all the time, and I will tell you that you have to define an athlete before you can say, are drivers athletes? Now, I was a track and field athlete, and in the Olympics, track and field is not called track and field. It's called athletics. That's what track and field is called in the Olympics. So when I look at it and I say, are these drivers athletes? I would say, yes, if you consider athletics, making your body, your mind, your hands, your feet do what you want them to do better than the other guy you're competing against. And so, yes, they're definitely athletes. Can they run or jump or throw farther than the great athletes that we see on a football field or basketball court or on the track and field or whatever? Not many of them could compete against those guys. Yeah, Jimmy Johnson's a phenomenal athlete in the sense of he can run and he can bike and he's very fit and he's, you know, amazing. But Jimmy Johnson's, you know, 5'11 or 6 foot and weighs 170 pounds or something like that. He's athletic, but would you call him a great athlete to put him up against, you know, a wide receiver or a defensive back or whatever? No, you wouldn't compare him to that, because that's not the discipline that he has focused on. What he's focused on is his eye-hand coordination and doing something that your body tells you and your mind tells you you shouldn't do.
Yeah, and I agree with that.
Drive a car at 220 miles an hour and think that it's going to stick to a racetrack when you turn left.
Yeah, and you got
people's brains can't.
And you've got to calculate in there too. Your tires are fading. You've got to change your line. Your brakes are fading. Things change. It's not a static. Just go out there and stand on the gas. It changes like every lap.
Right.
I played D1 baseball, and I've driven. Now I can tell you, when you get out of the race car, my heart rate is extremely elevated. I am tired. I'm mentally worn out. I don't know, physically. Yeah, there's sometimes physically. Road racing is pretty physically demanding. I'm saying they are. Not like you said. I don't think Brad Keselowski is going to go out and challenge for any football team scholarships. But it's a talent for sure, and it's tough.
I've watched Brad dribble a basketball, and I'll tell you right now, he's not going to make any basketball teams either.
That's fine.
But on the same lines, I will say that I really say that they are incredible athletes because, like I said, they can do things that most people in this world can't do.
Couldn't make yourself do that.
Exactly. You just can't do it. I've driven a race car. I've been on Charlotte Motor Speedway in a race car, in a Richard Petty driving experience, and I couldn't flat foot it. They told me I could. They said the car will stick if you go wide open through these turns. My brain wouldn't allow me to do it. It just said, no way. There's no way that the centrifugal force is going to keep this car on the track and not in that wall. And I'm afraid it would hurt if I hit that wall. My body said, whatever you do, don't flat foot it all the way through this turn.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Hey, Rick, last one here for you. Do you have a call that stands out as your favorite call as we wrap this up here? What's your favorite call?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't ever think about that. I look at my role as I'm watching the race with everyone else. So I don't want to be the show. I don't want to be the thing that you go, oh yeah, I remember Rick's call. That was great. I want to be, you remember that race? Do you remember what he did in that race? Yeah. As a matter of fact, I do remember it. I called that, So I don't think I really have a call. I guess, last year was pretty cool. When Jimmy Johnson won, I think I can't remember exactly how I put it, but I said something about make room, Richard Petty and Dale Earnhardt, there's another 7-time champion or something. I don't know what it was, but that was pretty cool because that's probably something they'll play forever.
Yeah. That's history.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That was cool just to be a part of it. So I don't have any memorable ones that jump out at me, but, I do appreciate the fact that I've been a part of some really cool things that have happened in the sport.
Yeah. Now, so one other question I was going to ask, we're going to Sonoma this week. One of the things
are going to make a trip.
Well, no, I didn't. No. I didn't say. I didn't. Okay.
I was going to say.
NASCAR's going there. Well, I wish. I'd be.
And if
totally
you're going, why don't you invite me? I mean, seriously, guys, I'm not in the man cave.
Now it's
we're going to fix that.
Now,
don't
now
you
can't
worry.
Go to Sonoma. Okay, NASCAR's going to Sonoma.
Okay.
We don't see the road course ringers anymore. These guys have become pretty good road racers. Do you think that's going to change anytime soon? You see it with the new, some of the new drivers that are coming through, the Blaneys and Larsons of the world, don't have a lot of road racing experience. You think it'll ever go back to that? Or
no, it can't, because every driver has to start every race. So you're not going to see anybody get taken out of the car for a road course ringer.
Yeah, I saw Boris Sett is going to be driving for Jeffrey Earnhardt, which is going to totally ruin his chances at the championship this year. It's going to,
which I don't think they had chances. Also, I can't remember who it is, but there's a guy that's going to drive the 43 instead
Billy
of Bubba
Johnson.
Wallen.
Billy Johnson, yeah.
Yes, Billy Johnson. That's right. Billy Johnson is going to get in there, and so I would say that you have those kind of one-off situations where a guy might be able to get in there. But if somebody's running for a championship, the best man's got to win.
Yeah, honestly,
I don't see. I mean, I say AJ Allmendinger has probably the best chance at Sonoma when they go.
Sure.
So he's very talented. He's shown that he's very, very good. But you can't take away what Denny Hamlin did. He and Tony Stewart racing. What was it? A couple years ago, or last
year?
Last year. 2 years ago. whenever Tony Stewart beat Denny Hamlin, it was one of those races where you're like, wow.
I didn't see Tony Stewart winning that race. That was not who I would have picked. That was a great race.
Those guys are great. And so Denny Hamlin's talented. Kyle Busch is talented. I mean, you go up and down the line. Those guys are really good at what they do. And they can handle that car better than anybody else. So when you put somebody in there that's not used to driving a cup car, I think it levels the playing field of maybe they're more talented as a road course driver, but they're not going to be able to beat these guys that are in these cars week in and week out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you guys going to have some wine after in Sonoma?
Are we going to have wine? My wife will, but she won't be watching the race. I promise you that one.
Good stuff, I love it. So, hey, Rick, man, thanks for coming on. NBC's going to be kicking off coverage. We're at Daytona, right? Is that your first race?
Daytona is the first race, July 1st. I'm looking forward to it. We're going to have a lot of fun. Hopefully all of your viewers, your listeners are going to be able to tune in. Did I get it right, too? Did you guys say that your show was conceived in a bar? Did I hear that right?
It was. Yeah. Yes. Yes. On a napkin.
Oh, that's really unique. I don't think that's ever happened before.
Ever. No.
It was.
I really appreciate you guys having me on, though. This is fun. I'd love to be a part of the 27th edition of Lap Traffic. So thanks, man.
Hey, absolutely. Thank you, man.
Thanks again. Thanks.
All right. That was so cool, Mr. Rick Allen, to call into the show back in the summer months, back when it was nice and warm out, unlike it is now with snow, more snow. But anyways, that's going to do it almost for the show here tonight. Everyone, make sure you check out the website, thelaptrafficpodcast.com. Follow on Twitter at laptrafficpc. Next week, unfortunately, I will not be posting a show due to Christmas and the holiday and all of that. Not sure I'm going to be able to have all of the equipment and all that set back up from the Christmas festivities. I should be able to get one out for the week of New Year's at some point. It may not be on Tuesday, but I will keep everyone posted on Twitter. Once the New Year's over, I'm thinking maybe two or four more recap shows, get through the mid to end of January, come back with a silly season show, and then get into maybe some shorter new shows until the season starts and able to get into the full fledge of season two and get some on-track racing going with the Clash and heading into Daytona. I am hard at work on a new format for the show once racing gets underway. I think everyone's going to like what I am able to piece together there. That said, I hope everyone has a great Christmas. Hope everyone gets to relax, enjoy some time with some friends, family, some beverages. I'll get some pictures of the crowd house up there on Twitter. Send me some of yours. I hope Santa is good to all of you. Hope you all have a very happy new year. I am signing off for the last time in 2017. Catch you back here next year. Everyone, make sure you check out the Lap Traffic Podcast, or you could be a lap down. See ya!